Let's press ahead then. Thank you very much. Next speaker is Ingmar Bengtsson of Stockholm. Excuse my pronunciation. Anti-de-Sitter black hole.
Well, you missed nothing important. And the spacetimes I'll show you will be black holes only for global reasons. If you've been attentive during the week, everybody knows that the first examples of these kind of things were found by Bagnardos, Hanau, Teitelboim, and Zanelli. And I'll begin by explaining their construction the way I like to see it, because once you see it with my eyes, you will be able to understand all the rest. So again, anti-de-Sitter space. Anti-de-Sitter space can be described as a quadratic surface in a flat space, and these embedding coordinates up there are very useful for calculations, but not very useful for visualizing things. For the latter purpose, I recommend these coordinates. Well, there is a coordinate system in which the intrinsic metric takes the following form. The spatial metric is the metric on hyperbolic space, constant negative curvature, and I'm going to use stereographic coordinates on that space. And then there's a time direction. And that gives me a picture of anti-de-Sitter space as a cylinder, or rather as a salami, because I can slice it into thin slices, and each slice is a Poincaré disk. That's in 2+1 dimension. If I'm in 3+1, what you have to do is that once you've taken the slices out, you have to rotate them around some axis so that it becomes the Poincaré ball, and that's 3+1. And I expect that you are reasonably familiar with the Poincaré disk. Geodesics on that disk are given by arcs of circles that are orthogonal to the boundary. And incidentally, the conformal boundary of spacetime I'll refer to as scry. To continue with the disk, isometries of the disk are Möbius transformations that leave the boundary invariant. And, the important cases for my purposes are elliptic Möbius transformations, that is to say rotations, and hyperbolic Möbius transformations that have two fixed points on the boundary and no fixed points inside the space. And if you are ambitious, that's one thing I'd like you to remember, that is to say, to any hyperbolic Möbius transformation of the disk that's associated a unique geodesic, that's also a Killing flow line. Concerning space-time properties, that's another thing I'd like you to sort of, maybe, possibly, if you can, keep in mind, namely that the amount of coordinate time it takes to go from the center of the disk to scry is pi half. That's sort of a useful fact. So this thing here is a light ray, and it takes 2 times pi half amounts of time to go from one end to the other. I'd like you to sort of right away start thinking in terms of the boundary of this cylinder. And here I've unwrapped the boundary, so you should really identify here and here. And I've shown the flow of this Killing vector on scry. And this constant time disk here is really this flow line here. And as you can see, there is no other constant time disk preserved by this particular Killing vector. In fact, up here, this Killing vector behaves like a Lorentz transformation and not like a translation in space. And this particular Killing vector, I'm sort of stressing this one because that's precisely the one that's important for the BTC construction. So now we come to the... I should also use this. If I can, yes. Now we come to the BTC black hole. it looks like this. So the idea is that I take the killing vector I talked about, and I exponentiate that so that I get the finite group element, and then I take the discrete group generated by that single group element, and I take the quotient of anti-de Sitter space with that discrete group, and that defines me a new spacetime that is precisely the VTC spinless black hole. To be more precise about it, I'm not quite doing this. That is to say, I'm not quite, the covering space will not quite be anti-de Sitter space, but it will be a connected region in which this killing vector here is space-like. So here's a picture of covering space. The thing is space-like between these two null surfaces here, which is actually a killing horizon for this particular killing vector field. You can sort of guess. So there are two. This area here, or the boundary, is this area here that some of you can see, but probably not too many. So, and then, okay, so I take this covering space, the open set that's between these surfaces, and I take the quotient with that particular isometry. And this is an easy case because I can easily find the fundamental region. This surface here, this time-like surface, is carried by this isometry into that surface. So what I'm doing is that I'm identifying points on this surface with points on that surface. So I have this sort of wedge-shaped thing. And the region in between here is my space-time. That's the fundamental region. And to make this a little bit clearer, I've cut out some constant time disks. Right. So this is a VTC black hole. And if you look at this picture, you realize that this is a black hole. Because a black hole is defined as a part of space-time that you cannot see from the boundary. And all you have to do is to ask yourself, what can I see from the boundary? Well, my best strategy is to wait as long as I can. That is to say, I wait till here and then I look. But of course, I'm looking down at an angle, so there's definitely going to be a region here that I can never see from the boundary. Actually, there are two components of the boundary, so I get the Penrose diagram like this, precisely like the Schwarzschild black hole. Except that it's anti-de Sitter, but this cannot be helped. I really need this time-like boundary to do this construction. If I had tried to do this in a more physical setting, I would, of course, have obtained a 2 plus 1 dimensional Misner space, and that would have a Penrose diagram like that, and it wouldn't have been a black hole. Incidentally, the event horizon is a boundary of the part of space-time that I cannot see and the part that I can see, and it's this null surface here, which is again a killing horizon for some appropriate killing vector. One more thing. It's really quite closely analogous to the Schwarzschild black hole, because there's also the interior here is trapped. You can easily see this. It's clear that this null surface here, you can think of this as a life cone with its vertex at infinity, which means that its null generators have zero convergence. So the intersection, now this is also a totally geodesic surface, and these constant time disks are totally geodesic, so the intersection down here is going to be geodesic. And as you can see, there are two orthogonal families of light rays with zero convergence, so the intersection here is a marginally trapped surface. And now if you instead of putting the vertex of your light cone here, you put it here, and you put another one here, and then you look at the intersection between these two light cones, it's not too hard to convince yourself that this is actually a killing vector flow line for this particular killing vector field. So that will become a closed curve when the identification is carried through. And since evidently the orthogonal families of light rays converge to these points, that's a closed trapped surface. So this whole region here is trapped, just as it should be. And that's the simplest VTC black hole. There's another one which is less simple, which is how do you make this one spin? I turn it upside down. No, that's not quite the solution. This is a spinning VTC black hole, and since this is a short talk, I'll be brief, and you may not quite understand what I'm saying. But what I'm got, what Banyados et al. Did was that they changed the killing vector by adding a small piece of an orthogonal killing vector like that. So this is now the new killing vector field, and this, well, this is a discrete group. Now, this killing vector is actually space-like in a bigger region than this one. It's going to be space-like. So what happens is that these two, the boundaries of covering space, move outwards and become these two time-like surfaces. In particular, here's a slice through t equals pi half, and you see what's happening is that there's a mouth opening up in the middle through which you can sort of, through which you are going to be able to travel in case you, by any chance, you fall into this thing. Now, why does this give a spinning black hole if I make the identification? Well, actually, first of all, the exterior, the covering space of the exterior will clearly be exactly the same as I had in the spinless case because, well, I wait to this point and then I look down and what can I see? Well, I can sort of see what's outside here. So the covering space of the exterior is the same as I had before. Nevertheless, this is a spinning black hole and the reason is as follows. First, we have to identify what do I mean by rotation. Well, it's clearly going to be a closed killing flow line, and the only killing flow line that's going to be closed is the one I use for the identification. And then what do I mean by time translation? Well, evidently, I have to mean something that's going to be a killing vector that's orthogonal to rotation at squi, and it's easy to identify which one this is, and actually, there is only this two-dimensional family of global killing vectors. And finally, to see whether the thing spins, let's look at squi again and more in more detail. In the spinless case, where this parameter b up there is zero, the flow of the rotation killing vector looks like this, but in the spinning case, it's sort of more wiggly and things. Now, on the other hand, the horizon is in both cases, so the covering space of the horizon is in both the spinning and the spinless case, is this null surface, and it's ruled by this killing vector field, which I thought this is a bifurcated killing horizon, and there's a killing vector here that's, well, there's a killing vector field associated with it, and that killing vector field will be some linear combination of the two killing vector fields that I have globally on the exterior, and well, on squi, the flow of this horizon killing vector field is going to look like this, and you have to express this at this linear combination. And in the case that b is non-zero, that is to say in the spinning case, it's a non-trivial linear combination, and this coefficient here is called the angular velocity of the horizon according to textbooks. So therefore, this thing is a spinning black hole. And it has, well, it has an interior with time-like singularities and Cauchy horizons and stuff. Just to, before I come to what I want to talk about, let me just briefly stick into 2 plus 1 dimensions, sort of. The basic strategy now, in as long as we stick to 2 plus 1 dimensions for generalizing these constructions. So the idea will be to form larger discrete groups and taking the quotient of some set of anti-de-Sitter space with larger discrete groups. Now, it's going to be very important that I don't have any naked singularities because that's, well, these are the rules of the game. This means that I have to sort of ensure that this discrete group gamma that I'm going to define by choosing its generators that will have infinite number of elements, I have to guarantee that all the elements of gamma are hyperbolic. Well, are sort of hyperbolic Möbius transformations. The reason why I'm talking about Möbius transformations now is that actually the full isometry group, of course, is SL22. That splits into two SL2Rs, and that's Möbius transformations, basically. So here's a Penrose diagram of SL22. It's two Penrose diagrams, actually, one for each SL2R, because it happens that the group manifold of SL2R is precisely 2 plus 1 dimensional anti-de-Sitter space. You don't have to learn anything new to understand the group. And what I have to ensure is that all my group elements lie, if this is the identity, in this region here, identify here and here. And this region is forbidden. And the easy way to control this is if I decide that all the elements in the discrete groups I choose should leave the surface, the Poincaré disk, T equals zero invariant. That essentially means that I'm looking at gammas that belong to the diagonal subgroup here. So I'm looking just as Möbius transformations, and I understand those. The general spinning case is a little bit more difficult, but you can control those on scry, because it turns out that the action of these two factors here, well, one of them is sort of right moving and the other left moving if you use light cone coordinates on the boundary. This may sound a little bit obscure. Nevertheless, this is how it is. Now, here are some new spacetimes. First of all, how do you form a closed universe? Well, you can guess. So the setting now is that I'm looking at, first at the T equals zero surface here, and instead of choosing, so earlier my fundamental region was this region between these two geodesics that I'm identifying. To get a closed universe, I use a fundamental region that looks like, say, an octagon like that, and I identify like that, as indicated. And this fundamental region defines for me a discrete group gamma with some elements and some relations, perhaps. And in this case, this is enough to turn my T equals zero disk into a closed universe, in this case of genus 2. That's not quite what I want to do here. I want to construct something which is a torus with an asymptotic region attached. That is actually achieved in this way. If I choose my fundamental region like this, identify like that, topologically you can convince yourself that this is a wormhole. And now the question is, if I start out with this torus with an asymptotic region attached here, how does this evolve? Well, all I have to do is to take the quotient not just of this disk, but of the entire anti-de Sitter spacetime with this discrete group, or the appropriate open set. And well, this geodesic here, this boundary of the fundamental region, analogous to that one, will grow up into a surface precisely like this one. So for each geodesic here, I put one of these surfaces, and the region in between these surfaces, that is to say inside this tent, is my spacetime. And then I can, work out the properties of that. Actually, this is, although I've shown it as if it consisted of four pieces due to the identification, so there's only a single exterior. And after some thinking, you will see that the event horizon, that is to say the boundary of the region you can see from this last point of scry, it emerges at some particular moment in time. It grows quickly due to the presence of lines of crossover when new generators enter the horizon. Then it becomes smooth, and at T equals zero it's smooth. And also at T equals zero, marginally trapped surfaces appear. I would analyze those as sort of indicated in the BTC case. So this entire region here is trapped, starting from T equals zero. Now the exterior here, or the entire domain of exterior communication here, is exactly isometric to the BTC spinless black hole. It's only what's going on inside that's totally different. Anybody still with me? Precisely. As long as there are caustics, or whatever you call them, where new generators come in, it's increasing, and after that, it's just like the BTC event horizon. It's a circle. I mean, it's sort of a circle cross R, but I mean, it's surrounding this opening here. Precisely. I'm pleased to hear that somebody is awake at least. So. there's a sort of a more advanced way of looking at this. which is to look directly in covering space. And so you ask, so I told you that covering space should really be sort of the maximal region where all the elements of gamma, a group that was generated by two generators, the one that has infinitely many elements, so I have to take away all the regions of this anti-de Sitter space where this Killing vector flow isn't space-like. And the way to do that is I look at the T equals zero disk, and I look how the fundamental region tessellates the disk. And after some analysis of this picture, I will find that there is this closed geodesic here. It's closed once the identifications are carried through, and it has endpoints like that. That is actually corresponds to, if this is A and this is B, these are the generators of the group. This line here corresponds to this group element, and I call that a horizon word because actually this is the unique geodesic associated with that particular hyperbolic transformation, and this is also precisely the event horizon at T equals zero. So I call this a horizon word. And now one can convince oneself that in between these two points there are no fixed points. Also, this line here will have umpteen copies in here, sort of, so there are fixed point free segments on the boundary all over. In fact, the fixed point free regions, which is what I'm interested in, is sort of analogous to the complement of the Cantor dust. It's a pretty complicated distribution of things, but one can sort of pin it down sufficiently accurately so that one can draw figures of the fixed point free regions on Scry. So inside these squares here, the flow on Scry is space-like, so the interior of these squares corresponds to covering space on Scry, and well, here's a three-dimensional picture of covering space. Now, the reason why I talked about this complicated way of looking at the simple thing is that if you want to make this wormhole into a spinning black hole, you have to do more clever things, and this covering space approach is essential. But let me simply observe to you that one can get this thing to spin, and there is in fact a six parameter family of genus 1 wormholes. A more urgent question is perhaps why am I doing this? One answer is that I can use it to sort of illustrate pedagogically, perhaps not in half an hour, but perhaps in an hour or so I could make you understand some things. For instance, I can use it to illustrate the slicing dependent topology of event horizons. I can actually draw an event horizon with caustics and things, and I can see how if I change the slicing, the topology of the horizon will change due to the presence of these lines of crossover, etc. And it's very simple, whereas similar discussions in 3 plus 1 dimensions are rather hard to understand if you just look at them. I could also give this thing as sort of a challenge to holography. As I told you, the domain of exterior communication of this thing is exactly isometric to DTC. So how, if you are on the boundary, can you sort of figure out what's going on inside? That what's inside is completely different from BTC. So some people have begun to think about such questions, but maybe they will have some use for this thing in their deliberations. And let me just briefly point out that there's nothing particular 3 plus 1 dimensional about this. You can find black holes also in higher dimensions by this trick. Here's one that has a toroidal event horizon that is growing. What you do is that you take the 2 plus 1 dimensional spinless black hole, you take out the disk, and you just rotate the disks around this axis here. And the result will be a Poincaré ball. Identify these surfaces, and you see that these surfaces come together and collapse into a singularity. Squai evidently has a toroidal topology. And in fact, the event horizon here, this is a single exterior black hole. And the event horizon in the 3 plus 1 dimensional case actually starts growing from a circle at t equals 0. And it keeps growing. So this is not a stationary black hole. This is not the killing horizon. And the apparent horizon is sort of well inside the event horizon, as was checked explicitly for some foliation that preserved the symmetries, etc. Pardon? Yeah, everything this is lambda minus one, and if in a tough world, people would therefore tell me that my results are completely unphysical, but the world is not quite that tough these days. There's another construction which, I take out this t equals zero disk, I make some identifications to turn the thing into, you can foliate the Poincaré ball here with Poincaré disks, and then you can do identification so that this whole thing turns into something with the topology of a Riemann surface times R. That will give me a black hole which has which is just like Schwarzschild, except that the sphere is turned into a Riemann surface of genus 2 or higher. That means, incidentally, that the area of the horizon is fixed, because this thing is a rather rigid construction, but it was pointed out to us by Brill and Luku immediately. In fact, I knew this before we published, that one can generalize this to introduce a mass parameter. K here, if this is K is 1, this is Schwarzschild, but this is actually a solution of Einstein's equation. Also, if K is minus 1, and then you have sort of a Schwarzschild parameter. Then you have sort of a Schwarzschild family of black holes, also with this strange topology. And people have studied this thing from various points of view. And again, you may wonder what's the use of that. And originally we thought of this as a challenge to topological censorship. Don Witt will talk about this tomorrow, I think, so I won't. The challenge has been completely met, I think, so. I mean, this is sort of out of date by now. Finally, it was pointed out by Holst and Matschul that you can actually get these black holes by colliding particles. In fact, what we've been talking about is basically, except that I haven't had any particles, but if you add those and let them collide, what I've been talking about all along is just the Gott time machine in anti de Sitter space. It's just that, unlike Gott, who was so pleased that he got closed time-like curves, and then he was criticized by others because it was unphysical, etc., because it had closed time-like curves close to infinity. What I've been doing following BTC is that I simply removed the closed time-like curves. I called them a singularity and reinterpreted the solutions as black holes. That's it.